Welcome to Fatal Flaw. I'm Molly.
And I'm Maddie.
A couple of disclaimers before we start. There will be spoilers for Percy Jackson and the Olympians and Heroes of Olympus. There will be adult language and adult topics, so proceed with caution. Mom, please don't listen to this.
Hi there. Hi, everyone.
Hello.
How are we all doing today?
I'm doing good, Maddie. How about you?
Oh, I'm doing all right. I don't know. I had kind of like a crazy weekend, except last night I literally watched Netflix for 8 straight hours. I have not done that in a very long time. I could not even believe myself.
Oh, my gosh. I did that like in college.
Easy. I don't even know if I've ever done 8 hours. The new season of Sex Education came out. And I watched
love that show.
The entire season in one night. I went from, it was like 10 p.m. to 5 a.m.
Maddie!
Okay, wait. I don't know if I'm supposed to talk yet, but I also love Sex Education. Is the new season good?
It is so good. It is so good. I was like kind of nervous. I wasn't super into the second season. I was like, whatever. So I was like so nervous that the third season was going to be like that. Oh my, best season. Honestly, best season.
Good.
It's so good.
I love that show. And yeah, Sam, you're allowed to talk. Let's introduce Sam real quick. You might recognize this voice. Sam's been on before. Last time Sam was here, we talked about... I said Sam. Last time Sam was here, we talked about Hades and the Underworld. And this time, we are going to be talking with Sam about Heroes of Olympics. Olympics? My God.
Wow.
Oh, my God. This time we're going to be talking about the Heroes of Olympus series, specifically the structure of it, and the POVs. I'm recording a fucking podcast and I can't fucking speak. This is an audio medium. This is not a visual medium. It's literally only my words and I can't fucking talk. Okay, so.
If this was audio and visual, we'd all be fucked.
We'd be fucked. But I would look cute, so...
Yeah, you guys would have even more fans.
It would make up for it. So, we're going to be specifically talking about that. There's a lot to talk about in Heroes of Olympus, but we're going to be focusing on the structure.
Sam, I think you're our first returning guest.
I'm so honored.
Our first returning guest who did a full episode. How about that? Do you listen to any of the other Percy Jackson podcasts?
No, I haven't. I did listen to, I think, your guys' like very first guest episode on
Seaweed Brain.
Is it on Seaweed Brain?
We've been on Camp Half Pod as well.
And Return to Camp. And I've been on Best Damn Camp. So
Return to Camp.
You need to catch up, Sam. I mean, the whole Fatal Flaw cinematic universe is out there.
I can't pretend I don't have the time now, so yeah. We'll see what happens.
Yeah. Just our episodes.
Maybe. I might honestly do that.
Okay, so if you want to get back into the episode that we're recording right now, 45 minutes in, we can start talking. I assume this will be a pretty quick one, but I'm cool with having kind of shorter episodes. Unless things get off on tangents, then we'll just roll with that. Sound good?
Yep.
Cool. Maddie, do you feel included in this conversation?
No, but let's go.
What? Well, then contribute. What do you have to say?
Look, this is what happened. I stayed up until 5 o'clock in the morning watching the new season of Sex Education. And then it's like 6:30. I'm like, what? Like, I'm like fucking around. It's cause like, whatever. I work nights. I'm like, I'll literally sleep all day. I'm like fucking around. And then it's 6 o'clock in the morning and I go, oh, fucking shit. I have to wake up at 2 o'clock to do this fucking podcast. And I feel like I kind of like, I screwed myself over because both of you texted me today and were like, what time? And I literally, I could have been like 3 p.m. and like gone back to sleep and slept.
You literally more. Could have lied.
I could have. And I swear I did to you, Molly, but that text message, so somewhere, like, I was half asleep
when you I You did was tell like, me what time, I just, we had talked about it so far in the past that no, I was not going to scroll up.
Today, I swear, like, when I was half asleep in my, like, half asleep brain, I, like, checked my phone, and I thought I had messaged Molly and said 3 o'clock. I swear to God, and I cannot find that message. I don't know who
I got don't believe that happened.
The number 3. It probably didn't. And then I had this like really weird dream. Yeah, really. Oh, it's like a fever dream. So yeah, oh. I screwed myself over last night.
Maddie, quick question. Are you on your phone right now? Are you recording on your phone?
No.
Can you do you have your phone with you?
Yeah.
Can you text me, please? Just anything. Just text me.
Do you have some new ringtone? She does.
Oh. Molly Paul, you beautiful lesbian.
I don't know if you heard that.
Can you please keep this in? I want to explain what happened. Even though... Guys, okay. I have never gotten blackout drunk before. But I am pretty sure Friday night I got blackout drunk. And I called Molly in the middle of a bar and left her a voicemail.
That was in the middle of a bar? That wasn't like outside afterwards?
Yeah, no, that was, I think. But you're the only person I called. I called you and I called my friend Brooklyn, who I was with, but I think I was trying to find her. I don't know what happened.
Well, I wake up and I'm not, you asked me, you specifically asked me in the voicemail to not play this on the podcast. So I'm only doing that little ringtone, that little chunk that's my ringtone. But you did say, I'm so excited to record our podcast with you on Sunday. You were very sweet. You said, I love you, you beautiful lesbian. You went mwah, mwah, mwah. so nice to wake up to. Ask Caitlin. I listened to it like 5 times in a row. I was crying. Oh. Maddie is a delightful person to have in your life. I just I'm blessed.
Blessed.
Molly
with the
Thal,
best.
You beautiful lesbian.
That's amazing.
So do you guys want to talk about what we're talking about today?
Yeah. Let's talk about some Percy Jackson.
So today we're going to be talking about the structure of Heroes of Olympus, specifically the narrative structure and the POVs. I think there's a lot to get into there. So you want to, Sam, what am I about to say?
You want to dive right in?
Woo! The catchphrase!
Our number one fan!
Yeah. Sam, like, had this glazed over look in his eyes. I don't think he knew, he knew what you were talking about at first. Oh,
it was the concentration of me being like, okay, I can't laugh or make noise. I don't want to set Maddie off again. I want Molly to be able to get through this line, this take. And so I had to shut down mentally a little bit. But I was there.
I am so sorry that I'm, like, so slap happy. I don't know why. I haven't had any coffee or anything to eat, so I think that's probably what it is.
It's not the lack of sleep, you think?
Oh, I've been on less sleep than this. I got, like, I got 6 hours of sleep.
That's impressive. I'm proud of you.
Molly's How like, you feel? I need 9 hours, cannot function with any less.
I do go to bed about 10 p.m. So, yeah.
What time do you wake up?
Like 6:30 or 7, depending on what's happening.
Yeah, that's basically my schedule too.
Yeah, pretty much.
What? I don't
I drink water. That. I get enough sleep.
Oh my god. I drink water. I drink lots of water. I eat
fruits and vegetables. I'm peaking right now. Anyway, our guest today, you might recognize his voice. We've had him on before. He's our first recurring... Wait, how would you want to say that? Because that was the whole thing.
I said returning guest.
Okay. He's the first person who's been through a whole episode and decided to come back for a whole nother episode.
Sam's really cool because I literally texted him, like 3 days ago, and I was like, hey, you wanna record some Fatal Flaw this weekend? And he was like, hell yeah, let's go, motherfuckers. I was like, he's always ready. He's got his ready recording face on at all times.
It really was it sort of is a busy day for me, but I was like, everything else gets structured around this recording, and that has been how my day has been, actually, so.
Oh my god, wow. We wasted 45 minutes before we started recording. I'm so sorry.
No, I do have shit I need to do, but I don't have any, like, other than this, I didn't have any set, like, deadlines or times for anything, so don't worry.
Oh, sweet. Okay. So, you wanna dive right in?
Yes.
Sam, you said something interesting about the structure of Heroes of Olympus. Now, I'm not a gamer, but you did have an interesting comment that it was very much like a video game structure. Can you elaborate on that?
Yeah. So I think I will assume you guys are not familiar with this, but there's a sort of like structure. Most popularized probably by BioWare, if you've ever heard of them. They do like Dragon Age, Mass Effect. Anyway, there's a plot structure where essentially you've got a team and you've got a base. And in the game, you know, a mission will come up, and in most RPGs you're limited to a set number of party members at any one time. So you get a mission, you decide who's the best people to take on the mission, they go out, do the thing, you know, plot events happen, resources get gathered, and then they come back to base. Something happens at base, another mission comes up, you know, rinse and repeat until you get to the, you know, the end of the story, basically. And I think, specifically in Mark of Athena, but seen a little bit throughout all of Heroes of Olympus, is that structure. And it just really struck me as, like, you know, as a video game. I mean, there's other examples of it too, other than like those games I mentioned. Like, you can see it in a lot of different games, but it just, I mean, I think it's to some degree purposeful. I mean, it is a YA series, you know. I think Reordin, I don't know anything about if Reordin plays video games or anything, but I feel like there could have been a conscious decision on his part.
Yeah, the video game I was playing last night didn't really follow that structure, but, you know, I understand what you're saying.
Okay, can I ask, just out of curiosity, what video game you were playing last night?
Yeah, of course, Molly, you can ask what video game I was playing last night. I was playing Stardew Valley.
Oh, wow. Maddie, you're such a cozy gamer.
Oh my gosh, someone has sent me a video and they were like, I'm going to become a cozy gamer. And I was like, what the fuck is that? I was like, what are you talking about? And she sends me like 4 TikToks of just like these people laying in bed and gaming. I was like, I literally have been doing this forever. Like, what? What is You've just this?
Always been a cozy gamer.
I was like, I don't know. I was like, why is this an aesthetic? You don't need to become a cozy gamer. You just play video games in bed. I was like so pissed about it, and I literally messaged them. I was like, this isn't an aesthetic, like this isn't a thing.
Holy shit, I did not expect you to come at cozy gaming so hard. That's fair.
I was like, you do not need to make a TikTok channel to drink apple cider and play a video game.
That's funny.
Okay, sorry.
Well, Stardew is the quintessential cozy gamer. That's like their Minecraft or their Fortnite. Like, anyone who considers himself a cozy gamer is a Stardew stan.
That game fucking slaps. it's taken me forever to get through this game because I don't play, like, video games very often. I will play, like, 5 hours on my Switch, and then I will not touch it for, like, 3 weeks. So I'm, like, taking my sweet-ass time getting through Stardew Valley, and my coworkers play it as well. And they're like, Maddie, we already fucking finished the game. I was like, how? I was like, I like to just do my little farming. Sometimes I'll go to the mines. I literally pet every single one of my animals every morning when I wake up in that game. Because I want them to give me good produce. And I'm like, I always pet every, and I get the little hearts. And I go to town and I say hi to all my friends. I don't understand how they finish the game. So I was like, it takes forever to like do all the motions of everything that you have to do. But they just speed through life. They speed through life, and they don't pet their animals. Molly's like, this is so off topic, Maddie. You're such a loser. Why do you play this game?
No. I literally have not allowed myself to get into a lot of the video games that are really popular because I know it would be addicting to me. When Farmville was really popular, I was obsessed. I would check my farm constantly, and that is just not good for me. So I'm setting that boundary for myself. No Stardew Valley, no Animal Crossing. I need to protect my mental health, or else I will get sucked in. I know that for a fact.
Yeah, that's what I have to do with collectible card games. Because it's such an expensive hobby, and
it really is.
I get hooked into it so easily. I just had to give up on. I guess there's no reason I can't bash the series right now. I was really into Hearthstone. Like ever since it came out, I'll play for a good while. I'll take a break and play for a good while. But if people don't know, Blizzard's in a lot of flack for a lot of sexual assault allegations and toxic work culture.
Oh shit!
And there's currently being sued by the California government right now. It's a pretty big deal. So a lot of people are boycotting, you know, all Blizzard products, and I support that. And
yeah,
was already taking a break from that card game, but it's just another reason to not.
I just have to say Hearthstone from Magnus Chase would never.
That's what I thought of. He said Hearthstone, and I was like, whoa.
Yeah.
Whoa.
What did you do?
But yeah, so as we've clearly established, Maddie and I are not familiar with the video game structure that you're talking about, but I can totally see that because it really is, especially Mark of Athena and the above ground portion of House of Hades. When they're on the Argo 2, they are really like, okay, meet up here, and then some random group of 3 to 4 people will go off on this quest. And then come back. And then at the same time, the other 3 people left on the ship are going to do this, and this. And then they meet up, and then it eventually progresses to, like the final boss. Is that the right terminology? Yeah. Is it just the boss, or is it the final boss?
I mean, it doesn't... Either's fine. I mean, I think...
The big bad guy.
Yeah.
And that definitely is a lot of what this series is. Do you think that's very different from PJO? The first series?
Okay, so is that Percy Jackson original? Is that what that stands for?
Percy Jackson and the Olympians.
Oh, that makes more sense.
Yeah.
I'm such a poser.
Wait, why are you on this podcast?
You don't know only read though. Percy Jackson to get on the podcast, so he's really...
I mean, in my defense, I was rereading the original series, which I probably read some of those books a couple times. I liked them a decent amount as a kid, but I mean, I think it is a very different plot structure. Even like the first 2 books of Heroes of Olympus has this structure, which you could also compare to video games, of like picking up the party, of like, you know, I mean, I guess not to a huge extent. It like starts out with, you know, let's get to know this cast of characters and pick up the extra characters we need along the way, mm-hmm. which you can see in some like video games. Like Mass Effect 2 is another one that does that kind of thing. But the original series, though, I don't think really tracks onto anything like that quite as easily. I mean, it's definitely got a traditional like heroic journey structure, mm-hmm. which is not surprising. And I think if you want to compare it to like Harry Potter or other similar, like,
I don't, but okay, go on.
Well, I mean, as much as I hate to name drop, the series that shall not be named, it is the most popular of that sort of like YA genre of like, let's attach it to school life,
mm-hmm.
To some extent. Which, you know, there are, it's actually big in video games too. Like, one of my favorite series is Persona, which is another RPG series. And the premise there is you're high schoolers by day, and at night you fight supernatural monsters. And like how that comes about is different in every game. But it's a similar thing of like, the main thing is this like heroic, you know, there's
the monsters. The hero's journey.
That people don't know about, and we're the only people that can do anything about it. Mm-hmm. But that day, there's still this like structured, you know, organization that, and Percy Jackson is like is camp, but in a lot of things is school.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
If I can just like interject with an observation that I made while you were talking. So Heroes of Olympus is more like a, like, I don't want to, I guess like a first person shooter type, not like Call of Duty or whatever, but like whatever games you're talking about. I forgot all of the names of them. I'm so sorry. BioWare is something that
you
said.
There you go.
Yeah. So it's like a BioWare game. Mm-hmm. My apologies. And PJO, I think, is more like Mario, where you've got your main character, Percy / Mario. He's going on an adventure, some sort of objective. Sometimes you can have multiple players. So, you know, we've got our side characters coming in, you know, player one, player two, but for the most part, it is a Percy-centered game or story, and you've got your main hero going on this adventure, which is Mario or Percy, and then Heroes of Olympus is more like an online, like, you get your friends, you get your team, everybody's gathering.
It's a little bit like Among Us. I'm a big gamer, guys. I play a lot of Among Us.
It's exactly like Among Us. I think I just saw Leo vent, so let's vote him off first.
I would never vote Leo off the island.
No, because he wants to stay on the island with Calypso. Is that her name?
Yeah. I don't know. Luke was acting a little sus.
Yeah, he's.
I literally feel like my mom when I was in like middle school, and she would try to use the slang. She would be like, "That's a little ratchet," and I would be like, "Mom, shut up!" And now I've become. I'm like,
how did you simultaneously age yourself and your mother in the same sentence? You were like, my mom was so old, she would try to use ratchet, and then you're like, and then I realized, I was like, ratchet is so old, you aged yourself saying that your mom was trying to be like you.
I know.
Wow.
So I am old. I'm like, Among Us teens. That's a little sus.
Let me do a Fortnite fellow dance. Teens. I don't even know what you're talking about.
Okay. Well, then we're all fucking old. So what I was going to say about that video game structure that you were talking about, Sam, with the base and the teams that go out, I think there's some really cool stuff you can do with it. There's a reason it's so popular in video games and in this kind of series. And I think the best thing that you can do with it is match up people who usually don't get matched up.
Mm-hmm.
Like, a lot of the characters, they tend to form their little groups, especially since the first two books of the Heroes of Olympus series have, you know, building this group of people to be really tight, and then building this group of people to be really tight. And then you put them all together, which is so interesting. And it's like, you know, okay, who goes off on that? The one where they're in Italy and Frank gets that upgrade, like the Blessing of Mars. That's like Frank, Hazel, and like
Leo.
Nico's not Leo.
Well, so like,
I think it was Frank, Leo, and Nico.
Yeah,
I thought Nico was there.
So. Yeah, Nico was there.
Okay, Frank, Leo, and Nico. You said.
Yeah.
So, like, that time that they go off and herd those sheep monster things, the pairing there, or the little grouping there, is Frank, Leo, and Nico. And that's a really interesting group. And so I think if we didn't have that structure, we would never see those characters interact very well. And I really like what the structure allows you to do with that.
I love that. That's one of my favorite, like, types of things that they'll do. So I actually was, like, reading, I think this was a few months ago, like, reading something about, like a sitcom writer, and they were like, the best way to write an episode of a sitcom, because you know how in your sitcoms you have like the central group of people, and I'll bring up this one because it just ended, Brooklyn Nine-Nine, which is like a really good comedy. How they structure it and how they write episodes is they make as many different combinations of the like core cast as they can and send them on an adventure. They're like, okay, let's start this episode. We're going to have Rosa, Charles, and Gina do something together. And that's how they start it. They are like, those three are going to do something together. How would they all react in that situation? And so I think
it's their group dynamic?
Yeah, it's a really good like writing exercise, especially if you have like a big cast of characters, especially like they do in Heroes of Olympus. And I think Rick could have done it a little bit more. Like, I think we see a lot of Jason and Piper together, and we see a lot of like Frank and Hazel together, but I think if he had like broken them up and was like, okay, Leo, Nico, and Frank are going on an adventure, how would each character react to what's going on?
Yeah. I was gonna say, I think what he does do well with that structure is the groupings of characters that either are interesting to be grouped together, or like you said, in any other situation wouldn't be put together. I think he does do that pretty well. I think where he falls apart is like when they go out on that mission, we get one character's POV. So for that whole mission, that whole grouping, we're only getting one perspective, because he sets up this system of, okay, this character gets X amount of chapters. Whereas instead, if in each adventure it switched perspectives, or if at any time there was no like set order and it was just whichever character is the most interesting or makes the most sense to have the POV, that's who gets it, would be stronger. Because like there's that other time where it's like Percy, Frank, and is it maybe just Coach Hedge that go to the aquarium?
Yeah, they go to the aquarium.
Yeah.
Because I loved that, but I think it's just Percy's POV the whole time. Whereas like if we got like Frank's perspective a little bit there, or even, like, give Coach Hedge a POV. Why not? Like,
Maddie would love that.
It'd be so good.
Like, it would be entertaining for everybody, but specifically Maddie would lose her shit.
Is it okay to have a crush on Coach Hedge?
Oh, yeah. I mean, he gives off great, like, daddy vibes. Like, he
Daddy, spends... sorry. Daddy, sorry. Daddy, sorry.
Yeah, I unironically love Coach Ed. She's cool. But that's, I mean, too, or like the Nico pairing, I think we just get Frank's point of view. But like, Leo's probably got some weird things going on with Nico, too. And Nico, you know, is off on his own. I don't remember whose POV it is exactly. But I think it's the missed opportunity is not getting everyone's perspectives when they're out in those groupings.
We can kind of transition into our next topic, which is POVs, which I think is really relevant here because we're talking about POVs.
But I guess that would make it relevant.
Yeah. I think that was a really smooth transition. It's going to make this episode really neat. A book that made me think of is They Both Die at the End. It's a really good book. Very sad. It's all in the title. They literally both die at the end. But it's a really, really interesting kind of universe, and it does switch POV a lot. And what I love about it is that they switch POV without any type of rules, without any type of, okay, you're going to do three chapters, and then you're going to do three chapters of this POV, and then you're going to do three chapters of this POV, and it goes in a certain order. Like, there's nothing like that. And it doesn't even limit itself to the number of characters it can do POV for. There's POV for a paragraph. One page that's literally just a paragraph of, like, a bystander watching something happen. And I do think, side note, they tie together really beautifully as the story goes on. You realize who these people all are. But at the beginning, it just kind of, it's like, or for most of the way through, actually, they let themselves kind of be very free with the POV length and structure, and it makes it really, really interesting. It's like, okay, who is this person? Why do we only get a page and a half of them? Are they going to come back later, or is this just the last little glimpse that we get into them? So I think that would have been really interesting, but I do understand the need for the structure. So I was just wondering what your thoughts were on that.
I was going to say, I think you have, like, explained it perfectly in terms of, like, how I think that structure works best. Because as a fantasy fan, it is one of my favorite things, like, books that do that kind of POV thing. And probably, like, mm-hmm. The best example of that is, like, Game of Thrones. And another series I like, Stormlight, does it really well. And I think, like you said, when it's done best is when it's loose, when there's not a, like, easily, you know, noticeable, like, structure. Like, mm-hmm. I can't think of an example that's as tight as Heroes of Olympus's is, where literally in each book there is a set thing. Like, I believe the first two books, it's each character, because there's a set of three in both. Mm-hmm. Each one gets four chapters, and then switches to the next, and switches to the next, and it's always the same order.
Yeah.
And he does a similar kind of thing in all the books, with characters getting different numbers of POVs as plot things happen, but there's a very strict order. And I think Game of Thrones does a similar thing of, like, the number isn't the same, but the first book, it's like eight POVs and nothing else.
Mm.
And it gets looser, but, like, I love it when a series will do, like you said, where it's like, this character gets a paragraph in this book.
Yeah.
And then you're like, maybe in the series later we'll get more of them, but, like, there was something about that particular moment that's the POV we needed, and that was what was most interesting. And that's when I think it shines.
Yeah. I also think, oh my god, I'm just like, I'm so glad that you mentioned that, because, oh my god, I'm freaking out a little bit over here. Imagine if we had that looser structure and we actually could have gotten a Percy or Annabeth POV in Blood of Olympus. Post-Tartarus, a lot of people say the reason there's no Percy or Annabeth POV in that last book is because it would be way too much to deal with. I mean, they're, like, going through PTSD and readjusting to life out of Tartarus. And so to have that going on at the same time as you're trying to progress the plot would have been so... It would have been impossible. But if you were allowed to just do a page or a paragraph or two pages or something like that, that could be so interesting to see. I hate to do this, but in Twilight, was it New Moon where Edward leaves and Bella feels like she's just kind of, like, the time passes without her being any part of it or whatever, and it has that iconic, like, October, November, did I skip a month? There's four months.
No!
I don't, does it start in September?
I don't know.
Page is just September, October, November, December. There's no words other than the month, and I think that was, like, fucking beautiful. It's iconic.
Molly is talking to the wrong people right now.
I watched the first movie while organizing comic books in my parents' living room at the first time, so that's the context for Twilight I have.
Okay, well, now you know that there's an iconic moment in the books where Edward has left and Bella is feeling kind of numb and time is just passing, and it just goes... September, October, November, December with no actual content, plot content. It's just the time period. And they really could have done something really, really interesting with that. Wouldn't that be so fucking cool where it was just like, you know, Percy and it's just kind of a blank page, or like Annabeth and it's just like maybe like, you know, her hyper fixating on one, you know, kind of, you could have her have like a Lady Macbeth moment where she's, you know, kind of falling apart over one little thing, or like something like really interesting like that you get to see that little glimpse into them, and and then you can move on with the plot. But because he has such a strict structure, you don't get to see any of their psyche. Whereas you could do some really interesting stuff.
Molly really said, Percy, no thoughts, head empty, blank page. She really called him out like that.
I'm not a trauma psychologist. I don't know what it's like.
I do think you're right, though. It's such a missed opportunity. Like, of either, you know, if it wasn't so strict, like you said, you could have, like, I think there's some justification to that argument you brought up of you know, potentially they don't need so many POVs, Percy and Annabeth, in the last book, because it would just be like trauma. But if you had one chapter for either of them at a point that makes the most sense, it could be so interesting and rewarding.
You could finish it off on a Percy POV.
Because their kiss was in one of their POVs. Because it made no sense. It was from like Piper's point of view, and it was like, oh,
it was so awkward.
It was so weird. She was like, I stood back there and watched them, and I was like, this is weird. This is unnecessary and weird.
Well, it's just so weird how he handicaps himself, because it's true the way he set it up, that it's like, if he wants Percy and Annabeth to get any POVs, they have to get put into this order of they get this many at this time.
Yeah.
And so because he set it up that way, he can't put them in, or he suddenly has to do all of these. Whereas if it was much looser, and then it also opens it up to, you know, giving other characters POVs other than just the seven, which could be great. We could get a Tyson POV, or Coach Hedge, or even like some of the villains. Like, I'd love to get a POV from the kid that gets blasted into space, the Roman kid.
Octavian.
Because he's not a well-written villain, and we don't really get, like, I don't really understand his motivations very well at all, other than he's just... Yeah, I mean, and sometimes that's enough, but, like... He just...
If it's enough for Game of Thrones, it's enough for Percy Jackson series, okay?
I'm just saying, that's a character that, like, ended up being more important than I thought they were going to be, and we don't really get much justification for their actions. So maybe giving him one POV, even, like, expository of, like, here's my thought process and here's my motivation outlined in a really blatant way would have made the character better, I think.
But I think you have to walk a very thin line if you're doing multiple characters POV, though, because it is so easy to get, like, fan fiction. It's POV switching is really popular in fan fiction, and a lot of it feels very, I've really set myself up for a bad sentence here. But it's very fan fiction-y, and that's not at all what Rick is going for.
I will say there's a huge difference between fan fiction and a published author. You can have as many beta readers as you want for your fan fiction, but it's not the same.
I want to ask that because, okay, I'm not someone, I read a lot. I've always read a lot. I mean, my mom was an English teacher, but I don't read fan fiction, but I know a lot of people who do. My girlfriend is a huge fan fiction reader and also, you know, loves romance books. So since I haven't read it, what would you say is the difference, other than raw horniness, between traditionally published fiction and fan fiction? Because I think you know, sometimes an independent thing is better than the, you know, raw, churned through the market, like, Marvel thing, you know what I mean?
Yeah.
So, where is that difference in quality? You know, someone who's read both.
It is...
Molly, like, I know you want to say something and you want to defend fan fiction right now. I see it in your eyes.
I'm trying to not shit on fan fiction accidentally, because I've dug myself a little hole here. And I've got a shovel.
So as someone who has no problem shitting on fan fiction, I think it's great. Like, I started reading like a couple of fan fictions because like Molly told me to. And there is one that I mean, it's like 600 chapters long, so I'm still reading it. But and I'm like 30 chapters in. I'm like, why am I doing this? But anyway, I don't really like fan fiction, and I'll tell you why, and I'll tell you what the difference is. The difference really just is polish. Sometimes you will open a fan fiction and they will just have gone, they just go like off the rails. Like, it can start really good, but they don't have someone telling them like that they have to stay in their lane or like stay in the one direction that they're going. And mm-hmm. I think that is the problem, because when you are a published author, so you write your novel and whatever, and you send it to publishers, but that's not what gets published. It goes through editors and, you know, they nitpick every little thing, because it's not going to go to the shelves if it's not presentable. And yeah, you get the occasional like, oh, this sentence doesn't really make sense, or like there's a typo right here, but it is so meticulously picked through that it's almost impossible for there to be like something that doesn't make sense. Like, so many different people are reading it before it gets to the consumers, and fan fiction, it can just go anywhere. It really can.
Right. And I think it's really positive thing about fan fiction is that there's a really broad range of, some of it is people's first time writing creative fiction ever, which is so beautiful. I think that's so cool that there are platforms where you can do that. And some people are literally like authors who write fan fiction, and some of them truly could be published books. And actually, a lot of published books started as fan fiction, and a lot of published authors started writing because of fan fiction. Shout out to Written in the Stars. The author started writing Twilight fan fiction and then grew into romance novels.
Interesting.
So I think that's a big asterisk. Every time we talk about fan fiction, some people are referring to the, you know, masterpiece works of a fandom, and some people are referring to the 15-year-olds trying their hand at fiction for the first time. And you know, some of it is more polished than others. I think when I say having too many point of views is a little fanfictiony, I'm referring to more like the less practiced people who write fanfiction, where really, and this is another beautiful thing about fanfiction, it can be as self-indulgent as you want. It can be, I feel like writing an alternate universe where Percy and Annabeth are tennis players at Wimbledon.
I also did read that one. Molly made me read a tennis fan fiction. I do not like tennis.
But if you feel like doing that and you think that that's going to be fun to write, then you can write it. And it's you're allowed to be as self-indulgent as possible. So you can do things like, I wonder what the point of view of this random girl in Percy's math class is. And you could do a whole fic like that, which is so fun. And that's like a whole genre of fic, is like outsider point of view. But when you're a published author, you're not exactly allowed to be as self-indulgent. So that's kind of where I would, it's a really fine line to walk. Having, like, I Think They Both Die at the End does it perfectly. It's a fucking masterpiece of POV switching. And then on the other end, it's kind of, you know, ooh, we're going to switch POV for fun, that kind of thing.
Well, another thing too, you know, you two as, you know, self-avowed not fans of fantasy books, one of the major complaints of fantasy books that do a POV thing like this, like Game of Thrones, is it becomes very difficult to remember all the characters,
mm-hmm.
because you have so many point of views and they're all in different places, so there's like groups of characters centered around one POV thing, and that can become, that's a common complaint. I mean, even Game of Thrones, like I said, it starts off, there's only 8 characters that get POVs, and that's a huge complaint level that book and series is.
Yeah.
How do you keep the names straight? It took me, you know, people are like, it takes me 600 pages to remember these characters.
Yeah.
So I do think, you are right. There, as much as I want to say, be as free with it as you can, there does come a point where, you know, someone has to rein you in and be like, this is becoming too hard to follow.
Yeah.
That could have been a concern when writing this series for sure. Yeah, because I just wanted to say that I feel I wanted to, like, blame Rick for his choice of how he did the POVs, and I think to some extent that's valid, but I think he brought up a good point of, you know, there are other that can become a messy structure, and maybe doing it in such an orderly way, especially in a YA series, was just decided as the lesser of two evils, maybe. So
yeah. In my headcanon of what happened when Rick wrote Heroes of Olympus is that he wrote something super crazy, and he's like, I'm going to introduce all these children and give them so much trauma. And Disney was like, okay, Rick, we love you. Percy Jackson was great. You can have 4 kids per book. And he was like, wait a second. No, like, look at all this stuff. Yeah. 4 kids. 4 kids, Rick. Only 4. We can't be traumatizing a whole generation.
I do want to say, I don't want it to be like a negative thing that we're talking about with this POV. I think it really does give you the opportunity to see certain things that you wouldn't have if it were a more loose structure. Like, let's say it's a Leo POV, and something goes on, like a plot point that happens that, let's say, if we had a more loose POV structure, it would have been more interesting to see from Piper's perspective. But because we're in this strict POV, we are kind of forced to see it from Leo's. And I do think that gives us some really interesting insight into the characters. So there are pros and cons to both types of structures. And we do really get to see characters' reactions who we normally wouldn't have seen their kind of internal monologue about certain things. So I would say it works in a lot of ways. I don't know.
I mean, it also, too, you can't really argue that, you know, any one character in the 7 gets too much in the spotlight. Like, it would have been really easy to be like, well, everyone loves Percy and Annabeth. They're the OG characters, and they're going to get more screen time than everyone else when they really don't. I mean, they, you know, obviously in specific books, they get more time than others, but, like, it's a pretty balanced thing overall, which is hard to do when you're introducing so many characters, so.
Yeah.
Everyone gets their favorite.
One thing I will say about Heroes of Olympus that I think I maybe didn't like as much is I think that Rick is really good writing from a first-person perspective. Like, I read Percy Jackson. That's what made me fall in love with it. Like, Percy is just a hilarious narrator. It's just so fun, so light. And then you also read Magnus Chase, which is also in first-person. And it's also, like, he's so good at, like, taking these characters and giving them a unique voice. And I feel like with the third-person POV, he tried to do that with the characters, but I think it fell a little bit flat just because it was third-person and we were switching around with them. And I think Rick is just so good at that. And, like, he gives his characters such a good personality, but I think it was, like, a little bit lost in Heroes of Olympus. And I would have liked to see, like, if Leo had like a first person POV, I think he would be everyone's favorite character. I personally believe that because I think Rick had such like an interesting character, but I think he was a little bit more restrained because he was in third person. Although I have not read Trials of Apollo. I know a lot of people have opinions about Leo from Trials of Apollo that I have not read yet. So that might be.
I think it is interesting. Percy Jackson and the Olympians, Magnus Chase, and Trials of Apollo are all first person, one single character. And Heroes of Olympus and the Cain Chronicles, according to my in-depth research of me Googling it just now, are both switching POVs. But interestingly, in the Cain Chronicles, apparently, it's alternating first person with two protagonists. So you do get first person. It's not that third subjective kind of thing that's happening in Heroes of Olympus. So I think that's interesting. I think he was playing around a little bit with it. I don't know. I wonder if he tried it out and decided he didn't like it, so he went back to, you know, Magnus Chase and Trials of Apollo, which is, it's kind of happening at the same time, but
Yeah. That's the theory. I mean, obviously, who knows, and maybe he's talked about it at, like, a book signing or something, but it does seem to be the case when there's, like, this one outlier of third person and everything else is first person, that maybe Rick also decided, oh, maybe I am better at this, or my characters shine a little better in the first person. I find it interesting, because I think usually I'm not the biggest fan of first person. I mean, it depends, but, like, I don't know, you have, like, the unreliable narrator thing, and that can be really not problematic, but I don't always enjoy it that much. Mm-hmm. But I have to agree with Maddie that I think, for whatever reason, the first person in the original series works much better for me than the third person in Heroes of Olympus.
Yeah.
I don't know.
There is a very YA middle grade-ness to first person, and I wonder if he was trying to grow up a little bit with it. You pretty rarely see adult books with first person. Usually it's third person subjective, where you get the inner thoughts of them, but it's not I, me, it's, you know, she or he or whoever it is. And that's, like, very much an adult fiction thing, and then you can kind of tell if something's YA or, you know, new adult or middle grade, whatever younger readers are going to be there, if it's in first person. So I'm wondering if he was trying that out just to kind of grow up with his readers, and then he decided he didn't like it as much.
Yeah, I don't know. I could see that.
Yeah. One more quick question. I have some ideas here.
Yeah, what were your things that you were like, I have these?
Yeah, so there are a couple of things that I've seen on TikTok that I would love your opinions. Some people say that, actually, I feel like I should cite my sources, but I don't like, I have no way of cite finding your it again sources. Because TikTok does not allow, find, like, it's, you just can't find things after you scroll past them.
I wish you could catalog your, like, liked videos.
Yeah.
I'd be like, oh, here are my cat-related videos, and here are my board game ones, and then I could find stuff in the
Queens. Yeah. We're just turning TikTok into classic Tumblr. So there are a couple of things that I've heard. One of them is that 7 is a really weird number. Because there's 7 characters that we get the POV of, right? There's Piper, Leo, Jason.
Technically,
there's more than that.
What's her name?
We get Nico and Reyna.
Let's review for a second because I don't remember what's going on. We get the Lost Hero group. We get Piper, Leo, Jason, and then in the next book we get Hazel, Frank, Percy, and then eventually we get Annabeth. And then is it in just the last book that we get Nico and Reyna?
Yes.
Okay, so that's still an odd number. That's 9. And they say that makes it kind of, it's like they just need to, like, structurally, I really wish I could cite my sources on this, but they say that structurally it would have made sense to take out a person in the 7.
The 10th person.
You, the leader. You are in the story.
Oh my god. So, I don't know. I'm sure they said it way better on the TikTok, but I was just going to ask, if you had to add or remove a character whose POV we get, who would you have said?
Well, wait, I was about to say, because Jason. Are we just straight up taking this character out of the book, or is it just a weird thing if they're one of the 7, maybe, but they don't get POVs?
Yeah, that's exactly what I mean. They still get, they still have to be, because I don't want to change up the whole structure of the book, but if we don't get their POV, who would you have liked to take out?
I do think Jason is there's a reason everyone hates Jason, but also, if we had to get somebody's, you know, like you said, the plot is the same, but we never get their point of perspective on it anymore. I think Jason's is the least valuable. Like, we don't, like, his backstory can get explained by others. He's got amnesia the whole first book anyway, so what's his point of view matter when he doesn't know his own backstory? He's a weaker character later in the books, too. Because I was going to say Frank, maybe, because I'm not the biggest Frank fan either, but like mm-hmm. it'd be hard to get his backstory without his perspective at all. But I think Jason is the pick. I hate to just dogpile on Jason some more, but it seems like that'd be the easiest one to be like, we can explain this with other characters.
Yeah, I think I would agree with you. With Frank, I think the cool thing about POV is that you get different writing styles, and you get such different, like, just, I almost want to say dialects. You get such different just voices. Voice is the word I'm looking for. You get such different voices, and I think Jason is the one whose voice doesn't add that much, because, like, Frank, it's true that plot-wise, it's important for him to have a POV, but also, I mean, he has a really interesting voice. It's very different from everybody else. So I would keep Frank on, but yeah, Jason, I would say he can go.
I do think this is a very interesting topic and like an interesting thing that you brought up. I wouldn't take anyone out. I don't think having an odd number of people is weird. I don't think it would be, it would make it better if you took a character out. Yeah, personally.
I agree, but I get their point of if you're going to do it in this very structured way, if you had set yourself, because it's an arbitrary odd number that he chose from the first series, right? Yeah. If he had set it up as six heroes or whatever, it would be easier to keep this very strict order going because you're working with even numbers.
Mm-hmm.
But I get that point of it, but yeah, I don't know. I mean, did you also ask us what would we add? Was that the question?
Or yeah, if you could add somebody as regular recurring POV, who would you have added?
I wouldn't have said it before, but after talking about the books now, it's gotta be Coach Hay.
Yes!
Without a doubt.
I also, as much as I love Coach Hedge, we all know I'm a Coach Hedge stan, I so wish that instead of him, it was Grover that went with them.
Oh,
no. And then he could have had a POV, it would have been really good.
I don't know. I love Coach Hedge as like the anti-Grover. It's so good because I'm like, because when he gets introduced, I'm like, here's another Grover character. He's going to serve the same purpose, and that none of that ends up being true.
He's Grover's Wario.
Yeah.
Oh my god.
Grover.
All right, and that wraps up the episode.
We can't end it on Grover's Wario. Come on. That's the worst place to end it.
There's one more thing, and I don't remember where I saw this, unfortunately. I think, I apologize if someone listening to this is the person who said this, and I just
no
forgot.
No one is listening to this.
Who this came from. But I have... unless it's Robert or Sam,
exactly.
They're not going to hear it. I've heard people suggest that the Lost Hero and Son of Neptune get switched. Now hear me out. Or hear this person out. This is not me saying this.
It sounds like it's you saying it. It sounds like you're like, I need to pretend that I don't know who this is because I actually am the one that said this.
I heard from a friend of a friend. No, but I really have. This is not my idea. I don't want to take credit for it. But I've heard people say that if we switched the Lost Hero and Son of Neptune, the really interesting thing would be that we would know nothing at the same time as Percy. Head empty, no thoughts. Because by the time we get to Son of Neptune, we kind of have a vague idea of what the Roman camp might be. We kind of have an idea that there is another camp, and at the very end, Jason has that moment, at the very end of The Lost Hero, Jason has that moment where he's, I guess, remembered the Roman camp. We don't know exactly how much he remembered at that point, but he makes it clear that there is a Roman camp somewhere. So the readers have some sort of idea of what the Roman camp is, and then Percy shows up and doesn't have any idea. And whoever said this said that it would have been really interesting to just kind of throw us in there at the same time as Percy. What do you guys think?
I 1000% agree. Mm-hmm. I think the only drawback to doing it that way is it inherently makes Jason's story weaker because now Jason is the one who, he's got amnesia, but we now know everything that Jason's forgotten. Whereas in the way it's written, we don't really know what Jason's forgotten. But one, his plot is very weak anyway. People don't like him, so weakening his plot isn't a big deal. And you kind of figure out what's going on before it's revealed anyway, to some extent. So the reward of strengthening Percy's narrative and, like, of, like, all of this is totally new and, you know, this Roman camp we didn't get teased for a whole book about beforehand, I think is a cool idea. On top of, I have a theory, another reason people absolutely hate the first book is because they want more of the returning cast to be in it.
Mm-hmm.
So if your new first book has Percy and the new characters, and then your second book is mostly just new characters, people wouldn't have had as bad a taste in their mouth about it.
Yeah, I agree. I think it's a really interesting idea. I probably would have read them in middle school as they had come out, if it had started with Percy, because I think that's why I kind of skipped over them. But I will say, I love some dramatic irony.
Yes!
I love knowing something that the characters don't know and being like, you dumb idiot, I know all of this. And so, Son of Neptune, I think a lot of it was fun because I knew a lot of stuff that Percy didn't. And I guess coming from the first series where it was all his point of view, and yeah, he didn't know a lot of stuff, but we were all figuring it out together, to going and being like, I know something Percy doesn't know. Like, it basically makes you feel like Annabeth, you know? Like, I know something you don't. It's so fun. But I also read them as an adult, so I don't know.
Well, yeah. I would say, I mean, I also definitely enjoy my dramatic irony as well. And, like, it would switch to now you have dramatic irony with Jason, which is not as great. But I would say you would still have it in terms of Percy also has amnesia, not to the same extent Jason does, but he does it as well in the second book. So if that was the first book, we'd still have the fact of, like, well, Percy, I know this girl that you know her name but don't really remember things about. I know your whole backstory. I know all this stuff. So you would get a bit of it. But I get what you're saying, too.
Yeah. And there also would have been a little tension of, okay, we don't see Annabeth's reaction to Percy missing until the second book, if we did flip them. Which I think it would be really interesting. Like, oh my god, Annabeth must be freaking out right now. And then to actually see her do that would have been really interesting. I like how it is now. I wish that there were more Percy in the first book, just because you just have to power through the Lost Hero to get to Son of Neptune, in my opinion. Because I love Percy so much. So I like how it is now, despite the lack of Percy. I just thought that was interesting. Well, that's all the talking points that I had.
I think that's a good thing to end on.
Actually, there is something else that I wanted to end on. I just wanted to tell you guys a funny story. I don't know if it's actually that funny, but I think it's very revealing about who I am as a person. Last night, me, my brother David, and my girlfriend Caitlin had some wine, and we recorded an episode of their podcast about the Muppet Show. It's called Being Green. You can check it out on wherever you listen to podcasts. And while we were waiting, there was like a technical issue. So we were just like waiting to get started. And another piece of background is that I don't drink. I like maybe once or twice a year, maybe. But like in general, I really don't like it. So it is very much a weird thing for me to be drinking. And I just kind of discover things about myself. And last night, what I discovered about myself is that when I've been drinking, I Google Annabeth Chase and click on images and scroll through and cry. Caitlin was like, there's literal tears in your eyes. And I was like, I love her so much. I just literally just looked at pictures, fan art of Annabeth for a solid like 5 minutes while we were waiting for these technical difficulties. And that was what I acted like when I was drunk. So
that's so interesting that you would share that with us.
I've sensed a lot of judgment there in Maddie's comment.
What do you mean by that? I thought it was funny. When I woke up the next day, I was like, oh my god, I just Googled Annabeth Chase and clicked on images and just scrolled and cried.
Thank you so much for being comfortable enough with us that you would share something like that.
Oh my god. I don't like post-therapy Maddie.
You know that means, Maddie, you gotta cut her out of your life now.
Yeah.
Anyway, that's just the kind of person I am. So, yeah, I guess we can wrap. Okay, let's try that again.
I guess we can dive right out.
Why are we laughing at that? That was
funny. It was
funny. My worst jokes are the ones that kill the most, so.
So, Sam, would you like to share where we can find you? Because I'm sure by the time this episode comes out, you'll have started your own podcast, right?
You have preemptively... I wasn't going to plug this, actually. You have preemptively plugged my plugs. I appreciate that. I've been told by the people I'm doing this podcast with that I can't give too many details yet. Because we haven't recorded our first episode yet, but we are currently in the midst of... recording our first like practice episode, so we're getting into it. I will say I can't say what our podcast is about yet, but our practice episode that will never air is about Sky High. So
oh shoot, you were watching that yesterday.
Yeah, oh shit, I love Sky High.
It's a national treasure. That's why I was rewatching it. I mean, you don't need an excuse to rewatch Sky High, but that's why, because our practice episode, we're going to be talking about that. But our real podcast has nothing to do with Sky High, but it will be coming out soon, so I hope...
I feel like your podcast is going to be a national treasure, Sam.
And that might be a hint as to what it's about.
I'm the only person on this call right now who doesn't know what this fucking podcast is about.
Keep an ear out for... Sam's podcast. I will for sure plug it when they put their first episode out, because I'm very excited for it.
Yeah, we'll definitely share something about it on Fatal Flaw's social media at Fatal Flaw PJO on Instagram and Twitter whenever that does become public.
Sam, do you have any last thoughts?
Yeah, I mean, I'm still your guys' number one fan. I can't wait to hear some new episodes, and I can't wait to be the first person to be on 3 episodes of Fatal Flaw in the future.
We are also looking forward to that.
Alright, well, thank you so much for coming on.
Yeah, thank you guys.
Thank
great
you for
again.
Listening to Fatal Flaw. You can find us on Twitter and Instagram at Fatal Flaw PJO. Music by David Thal from the band Glass Bandit. You can find them on social media at Glass Bandit Music.